Welcome to Speaking of College.
Welcome.
It's your source for reliable knowledge.
Oh yeah.
We got Dr. P as your host.
As your host.
We gon' tell you what you need to know. Need to know.
Need to know.
The more you know, the more you grow.
The more you grow.
The more you know, the more you grow.
Grow.
Getting more knowledge.
Knowledge.
Welcome to Speaking of College. Speaking of College, yeah.
Welcome back to Speaking of College, your source for reliable answers to college-related questions. I'm your host, Amelia Parnell, and I know you're probably thinking, what took you so long? I am so sorry for the long delay, but very excited to be back with you for the latest episode of the show. And today, I want to introduce my special guest, Joshua Williams. Joshua is a Los Angeles-based higher education professional and student development expert. He has a consultancy, JW1, in which he focuses on projects around institutional capacity building for colleges, coalition building and organizing, and resource accessibility for disproportionately impacted students. Through JW1, Joshua also develops and champions initiatives that center on community building to create spaces for diverse groups to share their experiences and resources. His current projects include developing learning communities and providing technical assistance for colleges in the California Community College System. He manages the Real College California Coalition, which offers basic needs guidance and implementation support for 94 community colleges. He also provides technical assistance consulting and training for new Next Up foster youth programs. Prior to launching JW1, Joshua was a practitioner and researcher at the Hope Center for College Community and Justice at Temple University, where he delivered basic needs coaching and technical assistance training to college personnel nationwide. He also served as the inaugural director of the Toro Guardian Scholars, or TGS, program at California State University, Dominguez Hills, which provided case management for former foster youth and supported students' basic needs. Throughout his time there, he built the program, launched the CalFresh Outreach Program, raised funds to support students in need of academic support and emergency aid, and he co-designed an app aimed at securing food for students on campus. Joshua holds a BA in communications from Cal State University, Dominguez Hills, and an MS in counseling from California State University, Long Beach, with an emphasis on student development in higher education. Needless to say, Joshua has much to share with us, and I'm so excited for this conversation. Joshua, welcome to the show.
I appreciate you for having me. Thank you so much.
Of course. So I'm representing Syracuse University for my hoodie. And who are you wearing today?
Okay. Yeah, I got my alma mater, Cal State Dominguez Hills, but specifically I'm representing our Toro Guardian Scholars, our former foster youth there. So shout out to our TGS team and our TGS students at Dominguez Hills.
All right. So I like to start every episode off with the same first question. So we got your bio. We know what you're doing right now. But I think every professional has a starter story. And so though I won't ask you about your childhood, I do want to start at the point where you went to college. So can you just tell us a little bit more about where you got your start and what were some of the factors that influenced your decision to go there?
So I got my start at Cal State Dominguez Hills, which is where I'm representing today. It's based out at Carson, California, which is a neighboring city of Compton, California. And it's in the Cal State system. It's one of 23 Cal States. And I would be remiss if I didn't just share that it probably would not have gone to college if it wasn't for my mom. You know, she was a single parent. She worked two jobs most of my life. And so I just figured, you know, the way to pay her back was to just work hard and go to school. And, you know, it just turned out that by the time I got to my senior year, it was time to apply. I wasn't really thinking about college. I was just more so thinking about getting good grades and, you know, trying to be the best I could be for my mom. And so when it came time to apply for college, I didn't really know where I wanted to go because I wasn't really thinking about it like that. I just, you know, and so I ended up applying to Cal State Dominguez Hills along with some other colleges. I got into Dominguez Hills, but I think the ultimate decision for me was just being close to home. You know, I had a big family. I actually had a scholarship to Clemson, and it was like some sort of academic scholarship to Clemson. I ended up not going because I just wanted to be close to home. And so that was the ultimate decision. And then I think just being, you know, a first generation college student, I didn't know what to expect from college. I remember starting Summer Bridge late my freshman year and going to class and expecting a bell to ring after class was finished. But I did know that Dominguez had a lot of Black students. And so I felt like that was going to be the closest thing I felt to home. It was still uncomfortable. It felt kind of foreign, but at least maybe I could figure out how to find some people that I could relate to and connect with. And then naturally, I'm an introvert, too. And I kind of I grew up in the streets a little bit, so I was already a little skeptical. But I think the combination of those things and the experience growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up in, just kind of being hyper aware and alert, I knew I needed to kind of go and surround myself with, I think, with people that I was going to maybe feel a little bit more comfortable with. And I think that was like the ultimate decision for me to choose Dominguez Hills over some of the other schools that I could have gone to.
Honestly, I think as I imagine the goal of the podcast, you would be a perfect audience. So I wish I had had a podcast episode to share with you back then. But I imagine, much like myself, anybody who has navigated college, and that's the topic we're going to be talking about today, has had a lot of questions about what to expect. I remember my first realization that I was about to start college was when I got my college ID. And I think my high school, we didn't have ID cards. And so the fact that I saw this university, Florida A&M University, and I had my picture and it said student, I was like, oh, this is real now. Like, you know, it's one thing when you talk about it, but when you get there, there's all these signals that you pick up that remind you like, hey, high school is over. You're about to start something new. And that could be a little bit scary. It could be a little bit exciting too. I like to start with that question, honestly, because I know somebody's listening and they're going to read your bio and be super impressed like we always are when you see someone who's made it. But then I always have the question, like, how did it all start? Like, where did it all begin? So I appreciate you sharing those pieces. And I think it's going to make sense when we start to hear some of your expertise. Speaking of which, if we're having this conversation about navigating college, let's start with maybe a softball or something that might break the ice a little bit. What do you think is a common misconception about how one should navigate college? And that could be somebody who's coming back to college after a period of time, maybe coming out of high school, or it doesn't really matter. But when you think about the tools, the ideas, the keys that one would need, what's something that you think most people don't quite have correct?
That's a good question. Honestly, simply, I think the misconception is that there is one way to navigate college. Like, I don't think that there is one way. I think it really depends on, you know, who you are. I think obviously there are practices, there are recommendations that I would share with students, you know, to navigate college. But we have to consider our context and who's maybe sharing certain things with us. And so, like, for example, if I am a parenting student, you know, and I'm getting advice to, you know, show up to office hours at this time, this many times a day, but then I have to go pick up my kids from school. Well, maybe that advice that I received, maybe that person didn't have that context that I was a parenting student, or maybe that advice just doesn't necessarily work for me. So I think it's really about finding your people, really, more than anything. Who are your people on that campus that can help support you? And maybe that's just someone who you feel comfortable with. Like, I know for me, at Dominguez Hills, it very much kind of felt like there was somebody in the office that was kind of like an auntie that I can go to and say, hey, you know, like, you know how you can go to your auntie's house and, you know, you're going to leave with a plate. You're going to leave fed, right? And so that's kind of how I think about, you know, when I was navigating college, like, you know, I kind of found the aunties, or I kind of found the big brothers, or I kind of found what I felt was similar to what my experience was growing up, and just kind of mustering up the courage to go up to them and say, hey, I'm new here, or whatever the situation is, you know, I want to know somebody who felt like that, had that warm energy. I felt like I can go up to them and ask them and talk to them. And so I think it's really about finding your people and then learning how to navigate and then learning how to leverage those relationships with your people to better navigate college, because people come in with so many different walks of life, right?
Yeah. I like the way you mentioned aunties. Maybe as a resource, as opposed to just something social, but someone that you could learn from. I won't speak for you, but I think maybe if I were answering my own question, one of the misconceptions is that there's, to your point, not just one way, but also the people that you interact with, they're not expecting you to know everything. So sometimes when you get that orientation about college, the narratives about college, or, you know, you're in the real world now, or you're about to be an adult now. So you're supposed to not need to ask for any help, and you're supposed to automatically know these networks. And so I kind of like the idea that someone who is experienced and has a welcoming and affirming type disposition is there to help you, literally say, let me help you with some things that you might not know. But then also make sure that when you do that, that you feel comfortable and that you have a good time. And college should be something that's not always stressful, you know, but instead something that's always reassuring that you made a good decision. I'm completely biased. So if anybody listens to this show, I'm going to be the one that says college is worth it. So that's a real cool answer. So I guess the backstory, if anybody could have read our emails as we prepared for this conversation, in one of your emails, you said, our experiences are our assets. What do you mean by that?
This is what I learned, and I didn't have language for it until really after I graduated college. I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just making the best sense of college that I could. And I think this kind of fits in with the last question that you had. I think you know, sometimes we step into an environment and it feels different or it feels uncomfortable. And a lot of times it's because, you know, these environments are not necessarily inclusive of our experiences, right? And who we are as people. And I think you might feel like you don't necessarily, you know how to operate in that space sometimes. But I think if you can remember this and really kind of set it as a foundational point, you can always come back to the fact that you're good enough to be there. If you're there, you're good enough to be there. You just have to figure out how to exist in a way that makes sense for you. Now, I also know that our college campuses have to do a better job of making sure that there are resources that are accessible to people from all different walks of life at the same time. So it's not just a one-sided thing here, but if you're there on campus, you have to kind of make it make sense for you. And so, you know, for me, you know, if you have a lifetime of experiences that, you know, you prepare for. And so, you know, for me, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and I grew up, we kind of bounced around from place to place and kind of, and mostly in gang areas. And so for me, it was making sure that, okay, I'm with my mom, my sister, you know, I took pride in like being the man of the house. I have to make sure that wherever we move to is safe, right? Or make sure that I know somebody and we know how to navigate the politics of this area. And so before I know people and before I understand the lay of the land, it's always kind of a threatening experience. And so for me, when I got to college, that's what it felt like. It felt like a threatening experience. Like I didn't really know who was who. I didn't know where it was safe to go. I didn't feel like I was necessarily going to be accepted because I didn't know anybody who went there. And so, but what I always did growing up was made sure that I connected with the locals, made sure that I knew how to navigate the area to make sure that we were safe. So I was navigating based on survival. And when I got to college, it was the same thing. It was navigating based on survival. And so it was, let me find home base, right? And so home base for me ended up becoming TRIO Student Support Services. So now that I have home base and I have my homies that I could talk to, that I feel like can understand my story and that I can relate to, now, all of a sudden, when it comes to understanding the other dynamics of the college campus, I can go to them or I can go to the people that work in the TRIO Student Support Services office and say, hey, can you provide like a warm introduction to the financial aid office? I just went to go stand in this line. It's crazy. I don't know what's going on. Or, you know, I remember my freshman year after what I thought advanced to my sophomore year. Because I'm like, OK, my freshman year, I was in developmental courses. And I think I was enrolled in 12 units. And then, so I'm like, okay, I passed all my classes. I passed, you know, my classes, you know, the first semester and second semester of my freshman year. And then I was expecting to come back that next year as a sophomore, not realizing that, oh, it's not about the year-to-year transition. It's how many units you actually complete. So it's like, oh, I had 24 units. I'm thinking 12 units is going to get me over the hump. And I really should have been taking 15. So it's those kinds of things that I didn't necessarily know. And now I have to figure out, okay, in order for me not to make that mistake next time, hey, it wasn't a mistake, but in order for me to maybe increase my unit load next time, I need to figure out who to talk to. And so let me go back to home base and figure out who on this campus I need to talk to. Or if I try to go and navigate that area myself and I'm unsuccessful, where are the other relationships that I've built, right? And then the other thing too, I think, is just connecting with other students. You know, that was a big piece of it, not just connecting with the professional staff, but connecting with other students and saying, hey, where are you going? Because a lot of times I just felt more comfortable talking to other students who might have grew up the same way that I grew up, saying, hey, do you trust this resource? You know, some of us don't trust this resource because, hey, I'm being honest, you know, here. I know we speak in a college, right? So, you know, sometimes we'd be like, hey, Bill, collect a call. No, hang up the phone. You know what I mean? Yeah. You don't trust everything, right? And so I had to learn how to kind of build trust in order to navigate the campus at the same time. And I did that by, I think, connecting with fellow students and other staff that I just felt comfortable and I felt like they had that warm energy.
You've already answered my next question, but I think I got a part two to it. Because I was going to say, you mentioned the aunties and you mentioned Trio Support Services. I was about to say, where are some of these places that, you know, an individual can go when they're trying to figure this whole thing out and navigate college? I kind of want to build on the third piece, which was fellow students. And I think I can name a couple things. I mean, I wasn't in college that long ago, but it was long enough that there are definitely some places where students would ask each other for advice. Like, should I take this professor or that professor? Should I take this class first or that class first? What's the best time to go to the library? What's the best place to go to for this or that? And it does help to have somebody that you know. Are there places other than, so when we say TRIO support services, if anybody's listening, TRIO programs are a suite of services that are backed by the federal government through usually a grant to the institution, and they provide a variety of services, usually for special populations who have something in common. Sometimes it may be students who are going to be the first in their family to go to college. It may be some students who have specific majors that they're going into, but it's a really great set of programs that many campuses offer. And I worked in those programs at FAMU many years back, and I'm a huge proponent of what they do. So let's say it's in addition to TRIO services and other students. Are there other places that you think someone navigating college should consider going to try to figure the whole thing out that you think would be helpful for them to know about?
Any student resource center or hub where there's like a big pocket or concentrated pocket of services. A lot of times you can get a career center there if you're looking for a job on campus or even off campus sometimes. There are affinity centers, right? They're usually like Black resource centers, LGBTQIA plus centers that students can tap into. Other programs, like in California, we have EOP, EOPS for the community colleges, right? For first generation low income students. So maybe similar to TRIO programs, but not federally funded in the same way. Obviously, financial aid and admissions are big. Those are two that you really kind of have to tap into if you're eligible for, you know, for
absolutely. Right? You got to go there.
Exactly. Like those are ones that you have to kind of tap on. I think a lot of academic-based supports too. I think it's important to think about, you know, tutoring services that are available on campus and tapping in with the tutoring center early. I realize, like, you know, I think sometimes we have this stigma in thinking about tutoring and even mental health services as, well, if I'm going there, something wrong with me, or if I'm going there, you know, I'm going there only because I'm not doing well in class. But, you know, honestly, tutoring is just to maybe just sharpen your skills. And so, you know, go to tutoring when you get in the A's and the B's to keep sharp too, right? And so I think those are essential resources as well. You know, any mental health services that are available on campus, utilize those services. You know, I'm now a consultant and I got to pay for my own health insurance.
Yeah.
Health insurance is expensive. And so, you know, while you have, you know, services available like that, I think that that's always beneficial to tap into. And then, yeah, clubs and organizations, like getting involved with student government and learning, you know, different clubs and organizations, tapping into different interests that you have outside of the classroom. Maybe you're interested in the anime club, or you're interested in the chess club, or you're interested in intramurals, right? You know, finding a community based on what you're interested in is really key, and that can really go a long way for your experience in college.
For sure. I would say plus one to all of those things. And to your point about health services, you're already paying for it. It's part of your student fees that you're paying. My advice to be someone, don't see it as something that means that anything is wrong. See that as an opportunity to check in with yourself and leverage expertise that you've already paid for through your fees. And so I couldn't agree more. If I could add one to your list, I would say one of the maybe ones that fly under the radar is libraries. So the librarians can do so much to help. If you're putting together a paper or a research project, they just know stuff. They know how to help you find specialty articles. They can do interlibrary loan stuff. So I always ask myself, and I don't know about you, if I could do college over knowing all the things we know, there'd be so many things. I don't know if I would be that student that would actually annoy professors because I know so much about how to get help and those types of things, or would I be the student that they would say, oh, this is really a joy to work with you. I think it might be a little bit more the former. I'd be the one asking for all the resources, you know, upon day one. So
yeah, I have to add one really quickly. Basic needs resource centers.
Oh, yes, yes.
Basic needs resource center. I work in the basic needs space. I've been working in the basic needs space for a while. And, you know, there are some campuses doing a lot of good work across the country and providing food resources, housing resources, transportation, childcare,
tax preparation.
Right, tax preparation, emergency aid resources for students. And, you know, I think the pandemic really kind of helped us see as a country that, hey, you know, our students really need support in this area. And even before then, right? I have a mentor, shout out to Rashida Crutchfield, a mentor of mine who says that higher ed discovered basic needs like Christopher Columbus discovered America. It's true, right? Like our students, our basic needs are really are a challenge for a lot of our students. And so these resource centers that we're now starting to see pop up across the country are really vital and have really been doing a lot of good work to support students. We know that there's a lot more work that needs to be done in that space, but it's great to see leaders like leaders that we have in the California Community College system. There's a lot of presidents and CEOs I'm working with in the California Community College system who are doing great work and leading the charge and supporting our California Community College students.
So I got one more question before we go to the break. I could imagine someone listening to this conversation. So, okay, Dr. P, okay, Joshua, you got all the answers. You tell us where we should go and how much help it can be. But if you're the person who's never navigated college before, and not to say that they have this idea that they can't do it, it may be a little daunting though. You're going into this building or you're going online and you're reaching out to this person that you've never met and you're trying to get them to give you help. It could seem a little intimidating for some to say, I don't even know what questions to ask. You got any simple advice for someone who was doing this for the first time, not expecting that the person on the other end is going to be mean or rude, but just truly, sometimes you just don't know what the first step is. And someone say, well, just reach out to them. Okay, how do I reach out to them? Well, just send them an email. What do I say? So I guess my question is, what advice do you have for somebody who's doing this for the first time? And we've made it sound so simple. And I've said, well, you're paying for it, just do it. But what would you say to somebody who says, okay, give me a little bit more support and how I can do this, a little bit of a guide, if you will.
For me, what I would say is, if there is that one person you have found already, and now you are looking to expand and get access to other resources or connect with other areas, a lot of times it's good to find that mentor on campus or ask them for that advice, right? To our point of joining a club and organization, it might be good to maybe connect with somebody who's a student who may be a junior or a senior. They have the student experience and they have navigated this, right? And they have gone through 3 or 4 years already of college and working with professors and kind of getting to the point to where they're about to graduate. So if you can find a mentor in that space, that would be great. And a lot of times, you know, if you're going in as a new freshman, there might be some opportunities for you to connect with like a summer bridge program or an early access program where you can connect with some peer mentors or some peer navigators who will help you kind of navigate through that space. A lot of outreach programs might have some navigators who you can connect to and talk to, and usually they're a really good resource as well. So I found a lot of support from my other peers early on, peers that were in my student support services program, who I might have had class with, or who might be a little bit older than me that, you know, can just kind of show me the way that they work the system and, you know, receive support for themselves too. And so I think that that is a good way to go about it. There's not one cookie cutter approach, like I said. So
I hear a theme here, which seems like just don't go at it alone. There's always going to be an opportunity, either a peer or a mentor or someone like that. I think that's the best advice. It can feel very, very intimidating trying to go into an office, a perceived stranger, even though you're part of the same campus community. When you go solo, bring a friend, ask a peer to go along with you. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you some questions as an expert in the field, things that I think would give us the 2.0 level of expertise on navigating college. We use data to make decisions every day, whether we're checking the weather, managing our budget, or planning a project. Sometimes it's easy to know which information you need and how to use it, while at other times, it's nice to share and analyze your data with a friend. I love data conversations, and I want those discussions to be more accessible and beneficial to everyone. So I wrote a book, and it's called You Are a Data Person: Strategies for Using Analytics on Campus. In the book, I explain why I think we all have a data identity that includes 6 core abilities that we all possess to some degree. I wrote this book to encourage all of us to leverage our strengths and make some of our most critical data-informed decisions together. If you want to learn more, my new book, You Are a Data Person, is available on Amazon and all other major book outlets. Welcome back. Joshua, are you ready for the Ask the Expert set of questions?
I am.
Okay. So we had the intro section where we talked about, in general, what it's like to navigate college, advice, where to go, where the aunties are, how to determine which peers you might want to reach out to. given your expertise, I felt like we should go deeper though. We should ask some questions that would probably get to those people who maybe are already in college. They've done the initial work, but they're looking around the corner, trying to think about what's next. And so let's talk about the future of navigating college and maybe some things that people on the outside listening to this might be talking about. So as you think about navigating college on the side of things that you're on now, so you've graduated, you're working with colleges and you're working with CEOs and presidents, what's a handful of topics that you think some colleges should be talking about more now and probably will be talking about more in the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years?
Basic needs comes back up for me again, you know, and I think the reason why is because, you know, when you think about basic needs, if our students can't focus on food, if they can't focus on housing, then they won't be able to focus in the classroom setting. And I think when you look at the data across the country on housing insecurity, on food insecurity, and just basic needs insecurity in general, the rates are really high. And so, and I know a lot of people might say, well, we're not, you know, we are not social service agencies, but our goal, right, should be to meet students where they are, right? And so, you know, students are walking into our classrooms, a lot of them hungry, and a lot of them maybe not knowing where they're going to lay their head at night. And especially for community colleges, one of the challenges is, you know, with affordable housing, it's almost impossible for a student to find affordable housing and go to school. And especially when we think about who our new traditional student is now, right? Our new traditional student is their mothers, their former foster youth, their students who have experienced the carceral system or the justice system. And these are students who are disproportionately impacted by basic needs insecurity. Yet these are the students who are now showing up on our campuses and navigating our campuses. So if we cannot meet their most essential needs and we can't identify strategies to meet their most essential needs, then the data also shows that they are likely to either get lower grades or withdraw from college. And so if these are our students who are coming to our college and we can't meet them where they are, to me, everything else becomes almost secondary. I would love to see more colleges do work across the country in supporting basic needs work and not just providing resources, but how do we create ecosystems of support around basic needs, right? And so when we think about basic needs, I think a lot of folks think about it in the traditional sense of food and housing, and those are obviously basic needs. But now as we understand and our students have gone through a pandemic, and we know that Wi-Fi is now a basic need, right? And access to technology is a basic need to thrive in college. We know that transportation is a need for some of our students, like myself. I had to catch the bus, you know, and sometimes, you know, I had to transfer. And so I would go through neighborhoods that were not safe neighborhoods. And that sometimes would be a challenge growing up in LA as a Black male, you know, just the safety of getting to school. And so, you know, for some people, they might not want to take that risk, you know, so there are different consequences. And so, you know, for me, I just think addressing basic needs really kind of helps alleviate some of the other challenges. And especially when it comes to housing, I want to paint this picture, because when it comes to housing is so crucial, because it's one of the hardest basic needs to support, because you can help a student with rent, but then rent comes back around, right? And so how do you help build a sustainable infrastructure to support these students? And it's really critical, because if students don't have housing, then all of a sudden they might not have a place to cook, or they might not have a place to shower, right? And then safety becomes an issue, and it kind of becomes this trickle-down effect with basic needs. And so for me, that is really critical for institutions to begin to think about, or to continue thinking about, how can they support basic needs. For those who haven't started thinking about that, how do they start thinking about it? How do you assess your students' basic needs on your campus and start to actually put together practices that meet their needs? And then how do you work to improve policies and systems and structures that help students access these resources so that they can spend more time focusing on studying than focusing on where they're going to eat or where they're going to lay their head at night? And so for me, that is the most essential need that I think that I would like to see colleges prepare for over the next 3 to 5 years and continue to support.
I can definitely appreciate that. I think, Joshua, that's what you're saying. That's issues 1, 2, and 3. Okay, with full stop there. And I think in some ways, just to add on to that, for those who are listening, and I never like to assume that anybody knows this, when we talk about things like food insecurity or housing instability or support for childcare or transportation and taxes and things like that, I don't know that everybody knows that campuses actually have those resources that don't cost extra for students. They're not necessarily unlimited and they're not always widely advertised, although I hope that we would move into a place where that type of information is not so hard to find. But I would say the average individual who's navigating college, if they happen to have, even if it's just a one-time short-term emergency, the flat tire, may have a loved one who's ill and you can't afford to get home to see them, these types of emergencies could be the thing that would keep the individual from persisting in college. If they knew that their campus had funds for those types of emergencies, it could make the biggest difference. And so I definitely hear what you're saying. I think if we're looking 3 to 5 years ahead to have the average college student say, it's not a big deal. If I have that one-time emergency, I can continue on in college. That can make a big difference in them pursuing their credential and every other thing. But I think we've learned in our professional capacities that not everybody knows. And so that's the whole conversation about how you put that together. You call that out as an issue for the next 3 to 5 years. I would say yes. And on top of that, I think we'll start to see, I hope, more campuses think about the process by how they provide those resources. So a lot of conversations about food pantries and where those should be located. Should it be in a place that's not as visible in the center of campus so that people can do that discreetly, have that opportunity to pick up the central food they need, or should it be placed in the center of campus to remove this idea that it has to be something secret and let everybody kind of flow in and out and it not be a big deal? So I think there's more work to be done. I think that's a nice segue to your work. We talked a lot about what campuses can do. We talked a lot about what students can do. I want to give you a chance to talk about your own individual work and maybe share with us what's coming up for you in the future and how that might plug into some of these needs that campuses are trying to address for students. What you got going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my own consulting firm. It's called JW1. I'm really excited about it. I have a team that I'm proud of who is really kind of helping me build. And really what we're doing is we're creating a technical assistance model to really help other practitioners identify ways to help support practitioners with implementing services on their campuses. We're developing a framework right now that I'm really excited about. I won't share too much because I'm not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure when we're going to release it, and we're kind of working on it together. So I don't want them coming for me. But so we're working on a technical assistance model, and we're really identifying ways that we can provide our expertise in helping, you know, institutions think critically about how they can better support students and better help students access resources and create systems and ecosystems of support so that we can create more sustainable processes, right? How do we help different departments talk to one another so that students don't have to jump through hoops to get access to resources? How do we help connect institutions of higher education to other services like the Department of Social Services and help ease some of those processes and help students transition across systems? And so we're thinking critically about that work. And so I'm just really and focused on taking a lot of what I've learned in my experience and helping other practitioners kind of not bump their heads in the same way that I did, kind of learning how to build programs. And so that's what I'm working on right now. There are two contracts that I'm working on that I'm really excited about. Both of them are working with California community colleges and supporting with program implementation. And one of them is support for basic needs in their programs. And the other one is for Next Up program, supporting our former foster youth students as well. And so supporting with the development of those programs. And so I'm really excited. I got a couple of writing projects that I'm working on at the same time. So, and then a couple of events as well. So
doing a lot.
Yeah, doing a lot. So I'm really excited and really just excited to support the community and support students.
Okay. Well, I got one more question before we get to my favorite final question. Pulling on all your expertise, you know, you're thinking about basic needs as issues 1, 2, and 3, most important. And I totally agree that you have to take care of that foundational stuff, or you really couldn't even expect a student to be able to navigate college effectively and smoothly and move toward a credential. Knowing all of what you've been doing as a technical assistance provider, champion for student success and all these things, do you have a bold prediction? You know, we're talking about the future. Is there something that you think is going to happen? We don't have to put a date on it, but if you look ahead to the future and you think about it, the work that you've been doing, the people you've been connecting with, the students you've been able to help and serve, is there a prediction? It could be maybe gloomy, although I tend to lean a little bit more toward the positive. What you thinking though? If somebody said, hey, again, I won't hold you to this, but if in the year 2030, we go back and listen to this podcast episode, we can say Joshua was right, or Joshua was close to right, or Joshua made us think. What would you have us think about in terms of the future?
Yeah, I would have us think about how do we adapt artificial intelligence into what we're doing in an ethical way, right? And so how do we do this in a way that doesn't compromise the integrity of the work that we're doing, but alleviates maybe some of the pressure and burden that we have at our institutions with being underfunded or under-resourced or just not having a lot of bandwidth? What are some of these things that we can implement to maybe help with some of the structures and kind of cut down on some of that time so we can spend more time with students? That's what I'm interested in seeing. I really am trying to figure out, how do we do that in a way where folks don't lose jobs, obviously. But, you know, I think that AI is not going anywhere, right? And we know that. And so how do we leverage it in a way to support students? How do we leverage it in a way to support the infrastructure and the work that we're doing on our campuses, but not jeopardize the integrity of what we do as academics? And how do we help students realize how to use it in an ethical way at the same time too? And so I think that institutions are already kind of working hard to kind of figure out what that looks like. With AI advancing so rapidly, I know that we're really going to have to think critically about how that's integrated into the work that we're doing and how we use that as a vehicle to propel student success as opposed to a crutch or as opposed to something that will eliminate jobs or eliminate opportunities for people. So that's what I'm interested in.
I think we can go ahead and call it. If it's 2030, you did pick up on the topic of the future. I mean, we could wait 6 months from now. I think everything you just said will probably be still just as relevant, if not more relevant. So like everybody else, I think I'm equally as interested in AI and where it's going to go. I do, like you, have concerns about the foundational pieces of these models and what they're learning to make them more precise. I also have those concerns about ethics in general. But I do think they'll probably lead to new jobs. Maybe the reduction of some things, but the creation of many new ones. And I hope that higher ed can keep pace for some of those new jobs and prepare the workforce the way we need it to. So, all right, I ask everybody the same first question, which is tell us where you get your start. I ask everybody the last question, which is the same, which is imagine you're looking ahead to fall 2024. And based on all your expertise about navigating college, your own experiences, things you've seen and learned from the field, if you could put together a backpack for a would-be individual starting college in the fall, what's something that you put in that backpack and why?
I would put together a list of principles because that's what keeps me grounded. And I think furthermore, what I might actually encourage too is that students develop their own list of principles as they navigate college. And so I'll share maybe some of the principles that I would include in my list that really helped me navigate college. I think the first one, because we talked about college and sometimes it can be scary asking for help or it can be scary not knowing where to go. But if you can find that one person that you can kind of develop a rapport with, I think it's worth also mentioning that developing that help-seeking skill after you find that one person is going to be critical, because I think that that will determine how much you are going to ask for help and then how you feel about asking for help. Because sometimes we feel like we don't want to ask for help or we feel like we are a burden and then we don't get answers to our questions. And that leads to us not really just being able to access what we need to access to overcome whatever it is we're trying to overcome or answer any questions that we're trying to answer. And so identify that person that's going to be kind of that safety net that will help support you. And then work with that person to maybe help develop, you know, some help seeking skills and help point you in the direction of other good people on that campus. That's something that was really beneficial to me. I think the other thing, we already mentioned it, so I won't go into too much detail, but your experiences are your assets. If you run into something that you experience on a college campus and you think back in your life and you say, this situation is maybe similar to this situation. Did I overcome that other situation? Yes. Okay. What did I do to overcome that? How do I now tap into those skills to maybe overcome it in this college environment? And then if not, then this is a new experience. I'm working on my help seeking skills. I've connected with that person. now I can go back to that person for support and they can kind of help me deal with, you know, how to navigate through this new experience that I've never experienced before. And that's especially, I think, true if you are first generation and no one in your family has been to college and you need someone, like you don't know who to go to ask for help. Finding that key person, I think, is critical. And then for me, this was really big because I would get frustrated. And when I get frustrated, you know, when I would get frustrated as a student, it could lead to just overthinking and a lot of stress and anxiety. But I had to really kind of tap into some deep breathing, right? Like trying to keep my composure as much as possible. Whatever you can do that will make you feel comfortable, whether it's listening to music as you're doing your work or make you feel like you can kind of be at ease, because I know at sometimes college can be stressful. So whatever healthy coping skills you can find, like listening to music, talking to a friend. I remember, you know, when we first went virtual as an employee, I was like, I need to tap into somebody and just sit in on a Zoom call with them to just have that presence and not feel like I was alone, right, in that space. If you're a student and you feel alone, you know, reach out and ask for support and ask for help. And so I think that those are kind of some of the key principles. I have a lot more that I kind of use to just kind of navigate my life, but those are some of the ones that I think are strong, you know, for a student. And just a resource list of everybody at the college, that, you know, all the programs at their college, so they could just go through phone numbers, emails. I think that would be helpful to a lot of students.
Yeah. I'm telling you, if you were to go back and listen to any episode, when I get to this answer, I'm typically saying, I want the backpack. I really do think at some point there's a spinoff conversation for this. I could do a whole episode on just what to put in the backpack. Now I want the backpack. So the list of principles, I see you already giving them a starter kit of three. It's develop your help-seeking behavior. It's remember that your experiences are your assets, and to do some type of healthy management of your emotions and regulating how you navigate college, but keeping yourself composed if you need to be. I think also it's okay to recognize how you're feeling. I don't think anybody's saying it's wrong to get upset, but I think it's how to move through your emotions and not stay in one place and become stagnant. So Joshua, this has been a great conversation. Long time coming. I know that our audience doesn't know how many emails and text messages we've been swapping to try to find the right time. I knew that whenever we got together, it'd be the right time. So I want to just say thank you for joining me. And if there's a person listening and they want to reach out to you, they want some consulting, or they know somebody who could benefit from some consulting, or they want to talk with you or connect with you, are you on the socials? You know, what links can I provide in the show notes for people to keep up with you?
Yeah. So first, jw1.company on Instagram, jw1. You can find us on LinkedIn. You can reach out to me there as well. Same socials on Twitter too. I'm excited to just continue to provide support to the community. And I really just appreciate you for having me on. And so I just encourage anybody who is interested in talking, please reach out. I love to be a resource for people, and I love to be able to help people find community. And so that's my main thing, and that's what I'm pushing. And I hope we can do more of that in higher ed, because I think that that's needed. And so please feel free to reach out. I'm excited to connect with folks.
I couldn't agree more. I believe in the power of community, and I'm happy that you are a part of mine. My singular goal with the show is to provide reliable answers to college-related questions, and I committed to only inviting people that I know and can trust as experts, and you are one of those. So thank you again.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for having me. And I'll be looking forward to part two, since you already put that in my
yes, ear. Absolutely. We got to have part two. If you have a question about college or an idea for a future episode, I would love to hear from you. Just drop me a note at amelia@speakingofcollege.com. I'll be back with another episode soon. And in the meantime, I hope you have an inspiring day.